Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
I nearly dropped my phone, we're all good. It is episode 86 and it is the 16th of November and we've got a huge show for you guys coming up. We are going to be talking to Michael Azias. He is in Australia with the Lights, Camera, Liberty Network program. We're going to be talking to him about being in the US, being what the censorship and censoriousness about Hollywood at the moment is taking its effect on American culture, and what organizations like the IPA and free market movements all around the world can learn from the program, which is going to be really interesting. We're also going to be talking to Dan Wild, coming off a trip to the US as well with the Atlas Network, about what he learned over there, what the US think tanks are thinking about, and what he thought of the midterm elections. Pete, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say, Ozzy is also going to talk about his experiences as a Hollywood mover and shaker.
Both. So really interesting stuff coming up. So let's talk about some of the stories. Now, the big one, and it's still developing, so by the time people hear this, there's probably a bunch of things that have happened, including, I'll say it, 1 week? Theresa May might be gone.
Oh yeah, no. The jungle drums are beating.
Jungle,
certainly, James, as they say in the classics.
You can hear them in the background. So the story is this week the latest round of Brexit negotiations got published. They're out and about. Well, not too far out and about. The public, as we're doing this show, the documents are still not publicly available.
Yep. Draft agreement.
Draft agreement. It's not going too well.
No.
Suffice to say. Theresa May has had 8 ministers resign, including the Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab. The Work and Pensions Secretary is gone. The Junior Brexit Minister Suella Braverman's gone. The North Island Minister Shailesh Varum's gone. And Conservative Party Vice Chairman Raimond Christie is gone. That's a lot of big fishes.
It is a lot of big fishes.
Especially in Brexit negotiations. You want the Brexit Secretary, the Junior Brexit Secretary, and the North Ireland Secretary. You want them on board.
Yeah,
like, you don't have them, you don't have a lot.
They've got the full house that have quit.
Yeah.
As Labor pointed out, there's been 20 ministers have retired in her 2-year leadership.
Is that good?
I don't know.
The question I've been asking on this podcast for a while, is that good?
No.
I don't think it's good.
I don't think that's a good sign.
No. So basically, what's in the agreement that we know of so far is there's going to be basically a $39 billion divorce bill between the UK and the EU.
Mm-hmm.
The UK looks like it's still going to have the EU basically broker their trade agreements. They can't have free trade policy agreements. And they'll also have the European Court of Justice govern a few of the UK's decisions. So basically you have all of the bad parts of Brexit and none of the good parts.
That's right. It locks the EU into, locks the UK into the EU customs union and EU laws without them actually having any say. So they're worse off.
They are much worse off.
And that's the bit that drives Dan Hannan bananas, as he told us last week.
Yeah. So Dan, he told us last week and 2 weeks ago, and he was also on BBC Live and he said, Britain is signing up to something worse than any other neighbouring country has ever contemplated.
Yeah.
Another not a fan. Also not a fan.
No.
And Nigel Farage called it the worst deal in history. So, yeah,
Trump-ish.
It is not looking too good for Theresa May at all.
No, that's right. And if you get a chance, that interview was featured in Hey, What Did I Miss Yesterday? If you get a chance with Hannan, get a chance, listen to that. Obviously not as good as our interview, but still pretty good.
Yeah, they did okay.
And I will add, James, that Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is a very popular MP in the United Kingdom and in
the
Australia,
and in this room, I like him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we're pro Jacob Rees-Mogg. Said, the deal will see the UK hand over £39 million to the EU for little or nothing in return.
Yep. It sounded like you're selling an ad.
Yeah.
Later in the show, we'll talk about how you could work for the Liberal Party in Victoria. But anyway, so the second Jacob Rees-Mogg put out his letter saying, I do not support this, 17 MPs do the same. So Theresa May, credit to her, Pete and Nina, credit to her. She has managed to unite all the Remainers and the Brexiters against her.
Yep.
Like they are as unified as they have been since the vote now. They both think it's a really bad deal.
Look, she's done well.
She's done quite well. Why the hate? Why the hate?
Well, I mean, I don't know if there is much hate, James. Maybe just disappointment. But so just a couple of things people should realise. This has to be still voted on in Parliament. And the Labor Party said at this stage, Corbyn said he's not going to support it. So it's not looking good for the agreement.
Yeah, basically, you need all of the people that support Theresa May and a bunch of Labor Renegades to jump over for it to pass, yep. and little chance the Labor people do.
That's right. That's
and
right.
if she can't pass this, she gone.
That's right.
She gone.
That's how they say on the as they say on the BBC.
As the yeah,
she gone. Oh, I can't do it. But yeah, and so the other thing is, yeah, her leadership is.
That's
in.
What the Queen tells her. That's you're gone. Yeah. You're out of here.
So, yeah, all happening over there.
Absolutely. Cool. So, I think we'll talk another issue, Pete. What have you got for us?
Well, let's talk about the Free Speech Inquiry. This is a win for the IPA. Free Speech Inquiry announced this week. The government asked former High Court Chief Justice Robert French to head inquiry into free speech on universities. Education Minister Dan Tehan claimed it was because concerns have been raised about people shutting down the views of those they disagree with and security costs for controversial speakers on campus, which we've been talking about a lot. Of course, a person who has been talking about this a lot amongst other people at the IPA is Matthew Lesh. I call it the Matthew Lesh Inquiry. And this
that sounds like they're having an inquiry into Matthew Lesh.
Well, they should tackle that at the same time because, you know, there's a few issues that must be raised. So they've been tasked, the inquiry's been tasked with developing a framework akin to the Chicago principles on free expression adopted by dozens of universities in the United States.
Which we talked about with James Patterson on the show a few weeks ago, so go back and listen to that interview.
Yeah, yeah, go listen to that. So there's been, you know, as we know, lots of issues with free speech on campus in Australia. Peter Reid, Bjorn Lomborg, people mm-hmm. forget Bjorn Lomborg. Like, how good is Bjorn Lomborg? But the brave academics of Australia said they couldn't handle being on the same campus as him.
Yep.
That still gets me as like...
Yeah, four years later now?
What a putrid backwater we live in.
Yeah, yeah.
We're one of the world's great...
I like Australia.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I'm obviously only joking, but, you know, not completely. Like, I mean, one of the world's great academics, and we go, nah, it's all right. Anyway, fine.
Yeah. And then the patina aren't stuff later. So it's a good sign that the government's taking it seriously and that mm-hmm. there's going to be an inquiry.
Yep.
And hopefully things turn out good from that inquiry.
That's right. Of course, as Matthew discovered, universities banning sarcasm. And if you do remember, Matthew did that speech to the university chancellors a few weeks ago about the issues about academic freedom on campus, free speech on campus. And a lot of the chancellors agreed with him and came out in the media and agreed with him. And now here we are. So what another fantastic win for the Institute.
Yes, indeed. And I hope it doesn't work out like the Israel embassy announcement from the government.
Well,
good
James,
segue for me.
What a delightful seg.
Yes.
Is this still me? Let's go again. So the Morrison government has told mm-hmm. Indonesian ministers there is a less than 5% chance that they'll go ahead with their promise or, you know, proposal to move the embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Less than 5%. I'm going to say there's a less than 0% chance of that happening. Of course, they're in the middle of a free trade agreement worth $16.5 billion with the Indonesian government, and a lot of Islamic countries were against moving the embassy, so that's why that's happened. As our fearless leader John Roskin pointed out in the Australian Financial Review a couple of weeks ago, just before the by-election in Wentworth, which is when this promise emerged, that promises like moving your embassy are for life, not just for Christmas.
Yep.
And
Or Wentworth by-elections. Yep.
And he was right to sort of pick up on the fact that that was a bit of a furphy.
Yes, exactly. I remember, like, and this is my own political development coming through.
Here we go.
When I read that headline okay. and I thought, oh, that's awesome. And then, you know, it took me about 10 minutes to just go, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
like I'm whittling down that 10 minutes of hope into 45 seconds when you rely on politicians to do good things.
Yeah. Well, John, and, straight away, you know.
Yeah, John knows.
That's why he's the king, mate.
Yeah, that's why he's the king. Because second he sees this headline, he goes, this is a Wentworth by-election thing and they'll never do it.
Yep. And he's right.
Well, we don't know. So there's still a bit of...
I know.
You know. Like, we all know, but we don't know, if that makes sense.
No.
There's still a bit of to and forth as to whether that was said and how serious it is, but it's not looking too good.
No.
Hopefully the Robert French inquiry ends a bit better than this. It can't end much worse.
It can't.
Yes. We'll also talk about this. So another story from academic freedom around the world. So this is an interesting one. An international group of university researchers planning a new journal which will allow articles on sensitive debates to be written. So far, so good. Under pseudonyms, though. So basically, it's going to be called the Journal of Controversial Ideas. It's set up in the UK, and there's a whole lot of things that if you write this or if you put a paper out, it's at risk to your career at the moment, which is something that, you know, one of the reasons Quillette has become as influential as it is that it says, you know, we'll publish in areas that other journals won't.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of researchers out there who want to write for Quillette, but they'll put... Sorry, you've got making a toast or something?
just hang on. Sorry about
before
that.
Before we get into that. No, so like you can put your career in jeopardy if you start writing about these controversial areas. So what this one is like, hey, you can write that paper that you've always wanted to write and we'll do it under pseudonym to protect your career, which I... So I'm torn with this one.
Okay.
I'm torn.
Talk me through your inner... inner conflict.
Inner conflict. It'll be 120 for you at the end of the session. Yeah. So... On the one hand, it's good that these articles that are going to be written for this paper will be out there. On the other hand, it's like, this is pretty bad state of academic freedom where, you know, instead of it saying like, hey, no, we should be free to write whatever we want to write and pursue intellectual inquiry, it's like, we'll need to do it under a pseudonym because we're that scared.
Yeah. Oh, look, I tend to agree. I get that people are worried about their careers and stuff like that. And, you know, that is a consideration for people. But at the end of the day... You know, grow some stones. Everyone gets heckled on social media for, you know.
I think it's actually like, oh, we can't have you. You're fine because of that. Like what you wrote.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair one. Anyway, well, Jeff McMahon, who is one of the organizers, he's a professor of moral philosophy at the University of Oxford. He said it would be, it would enable people whose ideas might get them into trouble either with the left or the right or within their own university administration. Jeff, how many of these are from the right these days?
Yeah,
like
it's the
how
left.
Many? Yeah,
it's not us, mate.
Like we ain't doing nothing.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one, and there's a really good article by Frank Ferretti in Spy to echo to like what I just said, where he says ideas that are anonymously communicated lose their force in the battle of ideas. Pseudonyms normalize the idea that academics should be frightened to express unpopular views. Consequently, they indirectly serve to delegitimize the views being expressed.
That's
which
right.
is far more eloquent than anything I could put together. So take that.
Well, Frank's right. And the other thing is, it actually, having pseudonyms means that people are more likely to express actually more extreme views because they've got the cover of not having to back it up.
Mm.
That's all. Just a
that's
thought.
That's true. Yeah.
Just a thought that's occurred to me. But imagine like, you know, who's some of the great, like, you know, Galileo.
Mm. What I would
like
is
his real
like,
name? Maybe it's not. I don't know.
I think it is.
Okay.
What if you wrote a controversial article that you didn't agree with, but you used the pseudonym of a personal enemy of yours.
Yeah,
and then you
or a frenemy.
His career.
Yeah.
Don't use my name, Pete.
But look, there you go. That's another good example.
All right, cool. All right, I got one more story.
Okay.
How many have you got?
Nah, that's
bit
it.
Of live producing. All right, I got one more story. So this one, this is a very cool political moment. So as some listeners might be aware, I do like a bit of American culture, and one of the shows I do like from time to time is Saturday Night Live. Now, 2 weeks ago, Pete Davidson, one of the presenters on Saturday Night Live, people might know him for being broken up with by Ariana Grande recently. Anyway, he was on the show and he does this segment called First Impressions where he just, it's basically like a monologue from him. And he sees a photo of a guy who was running in Texas for the Republicans, Dan Crenshaw, who lost an eye in Afghanistan, makes some pretty poor jokes at his expense. I won't repeat them, but you can Google them. And... You know, there's a whole lot of controversy. You know, how can Pete Davidson say this stuff? Dan Crenshaw does something which I'm just... Can we all just do this from now on?
Oh,
does,
but say how he got the injuries.
Oh, so he lost an eye serving in Afghanistan. Got blown, like, from an IED device. So,
yep.
You know, he had... Pete Davidson was dead to rights for this one.
I think someone said it was a gift from the partisan gods.
Yeah. So... You know, you've got a left-wing comedian going too far. You can sit there, this is outrageous. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
should be fired and stuff like that.
Yeah, and his interpreter died as well.
Yeah. So bad thing, stupid joke, shouldn't have done it. What's going on Saturday Night Live where that one gets past the editing process?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it is live, but, you know, it was a scripted joke. Mm-hmm. Dan Crenshaw could have just been offended and Pete Davidson could have been dragged through the mud and et cetera, et cetera. Dan Crenshaw just goes, you know what? Bad joke, don't like it. He goes on Saturday Night Live on Veterans Day with Pete Davidson to, and they just make, I think we'll play the audio here.
And I'm sorry.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate you saying that.
So we good?
We're good. Apology accepted.
Just keep breathing.
It sounds like my phone's ringing.
You gonna answer that?
No, and I'm just going to let it ring because that's rude to answer. Let's just let it go to voicemail.
No, it's cool. Ariana Grande.
Well, I'm cool, man. Yeah. Oh, do you know her?
All right. So that's part. All right. So.
Can we just do that from now on?
Yeah.
Just like not get offended, not fall for the bait, and just be like, okay, that person went over the line. we're not going to destroy any careers over this. We're not going to make this out into a huge thing. We are just going to go, you know what? Stepped over the line. You apologize. We're good.
Let's bring back being the bigger person.
Yes.
Because that was great. And I think it was a Ben Shapiro who said that's the best moment in politics he's seen for a year or two.
Yeah. Did you see that Ben Shapiro video, by the way?
I did.
It was. What was up with that? So for the people at home who haven't seen it.
What do you mean?
Like, TMZ just stopped him at an airport and asked him what the Saturday Night Live moment was. Is that, does TMZ do that?
I don't know. I felt like that the person had accidentally, had just said, oh, that's Ben Shapiro. I'm going to quickly film it.
Yeah. That was weird. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway.
TMZ usually do that. Anyway, question for another day. All right, that's it for the start of the show. So we'll now go to our interviews with Dan and Michael. Before we do, thank you guys. I'll run through a few of the things the IPA has been up to this week. As I've said, and Peter said, you've got Matthew Lesh and John Roskin. They are in the Australian and the Australian Financial Review, respectively, on this Free Speech at Universities inquiry. So you can go read what they have to say on ipa.org.au. You've also got a fair few blog posts from Jennifer Marahasi doing a lot of stuff in the climate area. And so thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. You can download us through Pocket Cast. We've got downloads coming in from all different platforms. So there is any platform you want, you can download us through there. So make sure you're telling your friends and family about the show and how easy it is for them to listen to the show as well. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you're leaving us that 5-star review. Really helps us out with the rankings. Now, Nina, we got a lot of members. And we also have a lot of people that would like to become members. How do they do that?
Well, visit the website ipa.org.au and click on the join button. And by starting at $22 per year, you become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Okay, cool. Let's go to those interviews. Okay, we now welcome back onto the show someone we haven't had on for a while, and he's not been in the country. So welcome back, Daniel Wild, research fellow here at the IPA.
G'day, thanks for having me back on.
Now,
The Wild Thing.
So you were just in the US with the Atlas Network and their MBE think tank program. So do you want to give us just a brief idea of what that was like and what you were learning about?
Yeah, so there's a global organization called the Atlas Network, and basically they get in and help all these think tanks, free market, liberty-based think tanks around the world. We're a member of the organization. They've got hundreds of members from, you know, anywhere from Lebanon to Brazil to China, New Zealand, you know. So it's a really great organization. I was there for some training, which was basically, you know, how to grow and develop your think tank and how to improve on everything from research to developing finances to improving communications. So it was a fantastic program. The best part about it is just meeting all of the people from around the world that are fighting for freedom. It's great and energizing to see how well everyone's doing around the world. Very enthusiastic crowd, and it puts a lot of our problems in perspective when you're talking to people from China or from the Middle East about how they're going, or from Egypt. It puts our problems into perspective, but it's a great program and great time.
Yeah, any of the organizations that you met, was there any of them surprising to you? Like, oh, I didn't know liberty was such a huge issue in this country, or?
Well, there was someone from China.
Imagine doing that.
Yeah, and
that'd be rough.
They've had a whole range of issues, like getting detained and not being able to leave the country to get into America to participate in events. So, you know, we have trouble. We get abused on Twitter, but he's, you know, potentially getting detained for expressing a view. So pretty amazing, and, you know, full credit to him.
Yeah, what? I did a Atlas Network thing last year, Lights, Camera, Liberty, and there was a guy there from a Venezuelan think tank. And, you know, he said, like, half of my think tank are currently behind bars.
Yeah. Crazy. Was he the one that had to go through like 3 flights? Someone was telling me a story, he had to have like 3 flights so they couldn't track him or something like that.
Exactly,
that was the guy, yeah.
I don't want to get hung up on the China guy, but what kind of stuff what kind of topics are they doing in China?
Mostly around anti-corruption, transparency were the main issues there, which are obviously huge issues in China. We talk about effective marginal tax rates, but, you know, they've got bigger things and bigger fish to fry there. So, it's an uphill battle there, but good on him for trying and doing his best, and hopefully it succeeds.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so you're meeting a lot of think tanks from places around the world, but you also would have been meeting a lot of US think tanks. And now these are the leaders in their field. You'd think Heritage, with the amount of members they have, the amount of people they've got into the Trump administration, Cato, Reason, etc. Yeah. So what are the US think tanks thinking about the state of liberty in the US, maybe around the world, and where things are going?
Well, they're all grappling with the same problem, which is how to deal with populism, how to deal with nationalism, how to deal with a lot of these changes that are going on in America and around the Western world. What does it mean for freedom and liberty, and where do they fit in terms of how they're going to be discussing and raising the profile of these issues. Heritage Foundation, as you mentioned, have been extremely successful in engaging with the Trump administration to progress some of their ideas. So they've had, every year they put out, I don't know if it's every year or every presidential election cycle, they put out a mandate for leadership blueprint, which I believe they first did under Reagan. And basically that outlines what their key policy proposals are for an incoming administration. And they've had about 60% of that implemented under Trump, which has been a record for them. So they had a lot of early engagement with the Trump campaign when other, you know, some other think tanks were sort of disavowing. They sort of decided not to disavow. They didn't go full in, but they sort of just hung around with the idea that maybe, you know, if he's the nominee, then he's our guy. We have to make sure that we're there to have our ideas. And so they've been pretty successful with that. And they've staffed out the administration, I think 50 or 60 people in the Trump administration. So they've been pretty successful there. The American Enterprise Institute's one of the other big ones. They have taken the view that they want to be more scholarly, a bit more removed from the day-to-day political battles. So they are more concerned with the research, the academic focus, and they don't really get involved in the day-to-day, you know, battles like Heritage do. So they're all sort of trying to find their way around. So it's a really interesting time there at the moment.
All right, so let's talk about the Templeton Prize, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
So this is a prize that's awarded for a think tank at this program.
Yeah.
Who was the winner of that?
The IPA was shortlisted 1 year. Fun fact.
Terrific, terrific stuff. I think we've been shortlisted a few times. But anyway, who won this year and what did they win it for?
Well, so this year it was won by an Egyptian think tank, the Egyptian Public Policy Center.
Once again, working in a pretty difficult environment.
Oh, yeah, very difficult environment. Look, they won it for an initiative they had around government, the government budget there, which sounds very boring. But the thing, apparently, government there never used to actually publish the budget, or at least it didn't publish sort of the expenditure items of the budget. So citizens had no idea where actually their money was going. So that was a pretty big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was really interesting. Another part of their program was around energy subsidies. Apparently, 30% of expenditure in Egypt was on energy subsidies, which is half of Australia, apparently. No.
Well,
not quite. So, they won for the work they had done on that. So now the budget is actually published. There's an itemized account of expenditure items, and they got rid of all of the energy subsidies. So for their role in
that's massive.
That's massive. That's right. And that's why they won. And it's $100,000 US, right? $100,000 US in Egypt is a big deal. I mean, that's going to set that think tank up for life. So I think well-deserved winners.
That's such a cool thing about the Atlas Network, in that there's so many think tanks that are in places like China and Egypt, places that really need the cause of liberty, and the Atlas Network can connect, you know, the IPA with these people, and they can connect Heritage with these people and really help out the global cause.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of synergies that you get from talking to people. So one of the main benefits of the Atlas Network is, funnily enough, networking and talking to people and seeing what they're doing. What you realize is we're all sort of in the same situation. We all have the same challenges. We all come up, have to get over the same hurdles. So it's good to be able to share some experiences. I think where the IPA is a very professional think tank compared to a lot around the world. So I was able to share a lot of our successes, which is really good to help them out. But you also gain perspective from talking to people around the world.
We will try and get a few of those people from developing world think tanks in the next few weeks. We'll let you know as they come up. I did want to ask you one question, Daniel. Did they say, so this sounds like a very educational program where you learn lots of great stuff about think tanks. Did you learn anything about how to make podcasts good?
Look, unfortunately not. You guys are on your own on that one.
Okay.
All right,
all right, well, come back next year, I guess. now, let's change track. So, really cool network. If you do want to get involved with the Atlas Network and read some of the stuff they're doing, it's all available online. But you were also in the US for the midterm elections, which was pretty huge. So, whereabouts were you watching that?
Well, I was on a bus from DC to New York, and then I was in New York for when the results were rolling in. So, New York is always, it's my first time in New York, actually. So, very obviously busy town, buzzing, and even more so in the midterm.
I believe they call it the city that never sleeps.
I believe they do, yeah.
I've heard that. Right,
yeah.
The Big Apple.
The Big Apple.
I do like...
Is it the Windy City? Is that Chicago?
Chicago.
Oh, it's close enough.
the city of love.
It's in the same continent, so...
The Venice of the North. Anyway, I do love this. City that is rats. It's a very Dan Wild thing. It's the first time I'm going to go to New York. I'm straight at the midterm elections. It's like, you know, there's all these like Madison Square Garden, 30 Rock. No. Midterm elections.
Well, the coolest thing was Fox News had a special setup near Times Square. They had like this outdoor broadcasting thing going on. So that was kind of cool to see the presenters outside being a part of the action there. So very interesting time. Obviously, New York, a very left-wing Democrat place, so not too many red hats around, but it was a very good time, very enjoyable.
Who was presenting? Oh, sorry.
Who was presenting?
No, he said he was presenting.
When I was there, there was the show called The Five.
It's not my question. I don't know how to pronounce it.
The Five, the show, was on.
Greg Gutfeld.
Yeah, Greg Gutfeld. He's awesome. You know him, yeah. I love that guy. So that was kind of cool to see them hanging out there. Mm. So only in America, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So any hecklers in the crowd?
No, it's all pretty peaceful. Interesting. It's just
not the feeling yet, is it?
Sliver of hope.
So, well, Dan, what was it like? So obviously you were there in Times Square. What was the mood in the country like? Was it as divided as it sort of seemed like it was on the news in Australia, or what was the mood on the ground?
Yeah, it's pretty divided country, I think. As I say, New York, probably not necessarily representative of America as a whole, but a lot of people obviously very anti-Trump, anti-Republican in that city. But the feeling you get is a very divided country. I mean, you flick the news between, say, CNN and Fox, you got two completely different narratives going on. You know, CNN saying massive blue wave repudiation of Trump, Fox News saying, you know, very successful Trump, you know, best ever, or, you know, one of the best performances in the Senate for a first midterm after a presidential election. So the issue there is, well, I mean, where do you actually get a sort of impartial analysis from? I mean,
The Young IPA podcast. But I do want to talk about that because, like, it is interesting that both the Democrats and Republicans can walk away thinking huge victory for us. What do you make of where things stand right now?
I mean, I think it's sort of split down the middle. The issue is that... you know, for Trump, the issue is really going to be, can he get Republicans on board with a lot of his things around, you know, I mean, his main thing of how he deviated from a normal Republican agenda was on immigration and trade. Now, I don't agree with everything in that domain, but that was what he sort of put forward. A lot of Republicans are obviously resistant, so some of his success is going to be dependent upon, can he win them over? But the other interesting thing is, when you look at some of these battleground states, that if you know, Trump wants to win things like Michigan and so forth, their number one priority isn't really immigration, right? That's more the southern states. It's healthcare, which is traditionally a Democrat kind of stronghold. So the most interesting thing to watch is what's going to happen, if anything, on healthcare now that Democrats have the House. I think there's a decent chance that Trump will try and cut a deal on healthcare, whether it's single pay or not, I don't know. And then the response from Democrats, will they just go to war with Trump and say, well, no, we're not, you know, our election strategy is just to go to war with you and we're not actually going to negotiate a policy, or will they actually come to the table in healthcare and also in infrastructure? That'll be interesting to see. I suspect Democrats won't come and negotiate just because I think they'll find it politically disadvantageous to do so. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Very interesting. Now, another thing that happened with the midterms was that a number of energy policies were defeated and some were not defeated. Talk us through that.
Well, the main one...
It's called winning, Pete. I know the cricket team are not doing too well.
Oh, well, actually...
It's called doing your background research, mate. That's all right. the major one, I think there was four up on the ballots. And the major one was in Washington State. Washington State is obviously a relatively left-wing state, Democrat state. And they had a proposal to implement a carbon tax. And that went down pretty resoundingly. So something positive there. You would think if a carbon tax is going to get up anywhere, it would be there. And there was one in Arizona that went down as well for a renewable energy target, and that got voted down. I think it was 60% or 70% voted against it. So overwhelming rejection there of a renewable energy target.
Yeah, because the Seattle one was also backed pretty heavily by Bill Gates. So
right.
Tough to see him take a loss. It's just tough.
Don't know how he's going to manage.
Like, I don't know. One day that guy will catch a break. Anyway, another thing I want to ask you about the midterms is something I thought was interesting was, like, the Democrats won a lot of seats, but a lot of their celebrity candidates didn't get up. So you talk about, like, Beto O'Rourke in Texas and then Andrew Gillum in Florida. Mm. And I'm missing someone there. But anyway.
Might have been Georgia.
I think it was a governor race
where Oprah came out. And,
Oprah and I think R. Kelly as well or someone. Anyway, not R. Kelly. I'll scratch that.
P. Diddy.
Don't want to get those two confused. P. Diddy. And so basically there was like this moment of like, is this going to be the time that the Democrats go extremely left-wing? And it doesn't seem to be that's the case. Like the more moderate you were, the more success you seem to have.
Mm.
Is that what you took away from it?
Yeah, like I think it's a mixed bag really. America is such a diverse place, so there'll be some areas where that strategy works, some areas where it doesn't. In terms of Beto O'Rourke, I mean, he actually did really well. He only lost by less than 2 percentage points. So that was a huge... gain for Democrats in Texas. Now, whether or not they're able to hold on to that and eventually win, and we know a lot of people have been moving from like California to Texas who are likely to be more Democratic voters than Republicans. So it may well be the case that the demographic changes in Texas are such that in time it will go to someone like Beto O'Rourke. But look, I'm not convinced by the celebrity strategy. I don't think it convinces new people to vote. I think it sort of makes people who are already going to vote that way feel kind of good about themselves. But I just don't think a regular person out there in voter land is saying, oh, Oprah's, you know, endorsing this candidate, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
now, it does raise their name recognition. There's no doubt about that. But whether it gets people out to vote, which is obviously a big thing in America, I'm not convinced.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so bring it back home. So while you're over there, you managed to write an article for The Spectator Australia because Dan Wilder never takes a day off.
That's the work ethic of this man.
Yeah, exactly. So but it was a really interesting article. So you're talking about how in the wake of the Wentworth by-election, maybe it's not a case that Wentworth, like, there's this whole idea that Wentworth is, you know, it's a blue ribbon seat, it's been Liberals forever, and maybe we're coming to a time where it's no longer a Liberals thing and Liberals need to redirect what they where they think their base is. Do you want to expand on that point?
Yeah, well, I think that the broader issue here is really the future of liberalism in our country and where what are the political parties and what are the policies that are going to be put forward that are actually going to be catering towards working class, middle class Australians. So one of the issues, as I see it, is you've had both sort of major parties becoming more and more engaged on, you know, things like environmentalism, climate change. We know that the, you know, both major parties sort of have very similar policies on these issues, and they've sort of neglected a lot of the interests and concerns of working class, middle class Australians, which were traditionally, like, working class was traditionally a stronghold of the Labor Party, but they've sort of been able to. You know, particularly a pursuit of identity politics is another thing where they've not as concerned about the economic opportunities that are there to working class people. In the identity politics prism, if you're a white male, even if you're unemployed and dispossessed, well, then you're still a part of the privileged kind of oppressor class, which just doesn't make any sense. You know, so that's the real issue. I think there's still a lot to sort out in our political system about how this is going to take place, how the political parties will position themselves. But I think it's a real key issue to look at over the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You often hear about the Labor Party being split from its traditional backers into other areas, but not as much about the coalition. But that's an interesting point you've raised there, Dan. Do you think other people will get involved with that?
Look, quite possibly. I think there's always... I mean, the Liberal Party is... you know, I don't like the term broad church, but it is a broad church, and the only way you can win is by being a broad church, right? You have to have enough people to actually win. So that's for the political party boffins to figure out, but I think the main thing here is we need to have public policy that's focused on expanding economic opportunity for all Australians. And whilst we have two major political parties that are increasingly becoming concerned about relatively marginal issues, that won't be happening.
Yeah, and isn't that sort of the experience of when Trump won? He took Michigan and he took Pennsylvania, two traditional Democrat strongholds, working class, and then, you know, a billionaire running under a Republican ticket.
Yeah, and lives at the top of Manhattan. Easily.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. He spoke to their anxieties and concerns.
Now, and Brexit as well. I mean, it was London voting stay and then sort of north.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you don't have to like everything that Trump says to realise that he identified and spoke to an anxiety that many Americans had that weren't being considered by the major political parties. And he's a very shrewd businessman and he was able to exploit that and win a market share effectively, if you want to think about it that way. But, I mean, a lot of these people don't have any dignity, right? They don't have a job. They're down on their luck and this guy kind of speaks to them, gives them some hope and they come out and vote. So you need to look at these people and see how their lives are and take into consideration their issues.
Absolutely. All right, Dan Wilde, welcome back to the country. Can't wait to see the future work you've got coming on. Well, and we'll have you back on soon.
Sounds great. Cheers.
Okay, we now welcome onto the show for the first time. This is exciting. Michael Isaias from the, in Australia with the Lights, Camera, Liberty Network. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Oz is in Oz.
Yes, Oz is in Oz. So, you prefer being called Oz, so we'll go with Oz for the interview. But you're here with the Lights, Camera, Liberty program, working with the Institute of Public Affairs. Do you want to give us an idea of what that, what Lights, Camera, Liberty is?
Sure, yeah. Lights, Camera, Liberty is a... It's a program designed to help pro-liberty organizations, you know, that are doing video content and maybe want to either have a video presence and a video brand with their organization or bolster the one that we have. But specifically, what Lights, Camera, Liberty aims to do is take is take like the lessons learned from Hollywood, and what, you know, we've seen and what we're talking about in the States constantly is just the dominance of the leftist viewpoint in our media, in our entertainment. And of course you hear about it with the news and stuff like that. But with Lights, Camera, Liberty, it's more of an entertainment focused aspect of like how, as when, you know, if we're with a pro-liberty organization and we're trying to get a message out there, it's like we're advocating, and we feel like we're always advocating. We're advocating for an idea, and we're advocating for people, and we're advocating for these causes. But what's really important once we get into the video content space is that we really have to advocate for the audience. Like the audience that is consuming this content has to be the biggest that we're advocating for before anybody else. Because if we don't consider them, then nothing else we're advocating matters. No one's going to see it. So we want to take those kind of entertainment ideas and that model that has, you know, Hollywood didn't invent it. They just kind of perfected it, I guess you could say. And so we just want to steal what works out of that and get it working for organizations like IPA.
This is what I love about the States, because in Australia we might have companies like yours, but it would never be purely just for liberty, right? So I think that just goes to show how big the liberty movement is in the United States. Would that be right? Would that be an accurate comment?
In that there is an organization like Lights, Camera, Liberty?
Yeah, exactly. Like there might be an organization like Lights, Camera, Liberty in Australia, but it wouldn't be specified just for organizations with liberty as their kind of core function.
Yeah, it's a bigger market, I suppose, in terms of like where resources are being drawn. But it also, I think, is appropriate that we should be spearheading it there, because that is we are such a big exporter of entertainment content. The whole world watches, you know, American shows and films.
Me more than most. That's for sure. So let's talk about that, because one thing that I was really interested in when we were in the session yesterday was the idea that for so long, sort of left-wing groups, I guess, they've been hitting the emotional side of the arguments, and then the right-wing, for want of a better term, groups respond with, you know, statistics and facts. And one thing that everyone sort of has to, like, free market, libertarian, conservative, whatever they want, they need to start getting into the emotional space as well if they want to start winning hearts and minds. Do you see that as a challenge in the US as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just born out of kind of the way that we have been comparing ourselves to these other ideologies for a long time, in the sense of saying like for example, you know, you're trying socialism again, are you? Yeah. You know, it's like didn't work in the past, but you know,
no,
you'll
but that
be
wasn't
the
real
one
socialism.
To crack it.
That wasn't real socialism. Next time it'll be real socialism.
Now we'll get it right. Yeah. If only I could design it. Yeah, so we're looking at these ideas, and then we're thinking about like how do we embrace people, how do we engage people, and so I think when we talk about the emotional thread, and we talk about, you know, it's the kind of thing that in the past we might have seen somebody do something and they would have a let's say a left-leaning perspective, and they would do something and it might have been an emotional story and it might have been something earnest, and we would have said, okay, well, you know, maybe I don't agree with the grand philosophy behind that, but that was well done and it was fair and true what they said. But then once it got to the point that we really saw in the States, we really saw media being just straight up just hijacked and manipulated, and things that are, quote, documentary, unquote, you know, coming out, and how this was all getting really distorted. That really is that it took us all too long to wake up to that. But once it's been seen and identified, then there are resources that are being put, and there are a lot of people that care about it, and a lot of people that want to see not just news balanced and journalism and information out there, but entertainment. It's like, it, 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 it does matter. At the end of the day, you've got a story. Maybe it's only housed in a framework of someone's worldview, but that still doesn't mean that worldviews of all varieties shouldn't be represented in these frameworks.
That's really interesting. So when you talk about sort of documentaries and entertainment being distorted, could you give our listeners some examples just so they know what you're referring to?
Well, I'm referring to the fact that, for example, we're going to, if you're going out and you're going to see a movie and liberty-minded people, we like our heroic stories and our William Wallace's and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If you go to see a story about a lone warrior champion against some cause, what is that cause going to be? Like these days, most of the time, it's going to be some evil corporation, some big, it's going to be some private sector entity that has gone rogue and is that has somehow become the dystopian view in so many decades past, the dystopian view was the government, the people with that level of power. So just in a really very simple surface level way, that's one of the things we see. It's always the corporation. So, they're the evils. So, and again, the stories might be about a hero and he might be doing something that's really laudable and all this stuff. So really you're just talking about the framework, but nonetheless, that is why they have been so successful, because sometimes we have seen, someone who's got a right leaning or libertarian leaning idea for a film, and they'll have an opportunity and they'll get funding and they'll put it out and they'll just hammer the idea over the head. They'll just punch us in the face with it. It's sort of like, finally got a chance to do something that's, of a different worldview. And we do that because the opportunities seem so few and far between. On the other side, they have so many opportunities that it's like, we don't have to hit this thing, everything with this one shot. Just make the framework. Just, how about this? And I'm not making it like there's some conspiracy and they're all in a room going, how do we advance the liberal agenda through Hollywood film? It percolates, and it's just like, it's a corporation here that we're supposed to be afraid of. It's some other private sector capitalist or entrepreneurial entity. We got to be afraid of them, and it's like all the while, government is there to save us, and the nanny state is good. These are the kind of things that are just like everyone's. Not everyone. People of that worldview like it, but others have just grown fed up with it. So now we've made moves on news. We made moves on documentary. We made moves on the web space, and I think the entertainment space, the Hollywood. That's the last kind of frontier that I think I'd like to see cracked in the way others are in terms of these other viewpoints.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's a lot of sitcoms out there. Not a lot of sitcoms, but certainly some sitcom writers who are saying, I no longer hire people who vote Republican. I no longer hire people who don't vote Democrat. What do you reckon happens to American culture when there's whole sections of the American populace who are just frozen out of writers' rooms, frozen out of talk shows and stuff like that?
I think we're seeing it. I think that's what entertainment and TV and journalism looks like. And what we're looking at now is the result of exactly that. These are stories that we've heard over and over and over again. And with our company, we're at least two of the three of us are in Los Angeles, so we're like in the lion's den of this sort of left-leaning ideological sort of entertainment stuff, but within that, we and others who don't see ourselves as being on the far left, we find each other. We're all like in this life raft of sorts, but it's growing, and people. I would say that I do think there's maybe less of that happening. That it is starting to change a bit, but. But it's like a pendulum. This is the reason that it would be happening now, and some jobs and people would be having an easier time would be as a result of the pendulum just swinging so far that people have had it and are trying to take action and and balance things out. So I feel really bad. You know, it's like those, the people that lose their jobs in that way, that's what ends up promoting this culture of just keep it to yourself, keep your ideas hidden, keep your mouth shut. And that's not what we want.
So we were wondering, being a Hollywood mover and shaker, as you obviously are, have you worked with anyone famous, maybe from the Liberty Movement, or worked with anyone famous from just in general like that? Just give us a few famous people stories. That's what we're after here.
Oh, famous people stories.
Like party with Lindsay Lohan, something like that.
Close.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Interviewed Alan Greenspan.
Oh, okay. Really? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
The Alan Greenspan, Lindsay Lohan joint birthday parties go off.
I don't know if it was exactly the same as partying with Lindsay Lohan, but... Yeah. Probably, yeah.
How many illicit drugs in the room? I think
I guess, you know, it's like we've crossed paths with what one might say, you know, liberty luminaries.
Yeah, give us some of those. And,
Ron Paul, Rand Paul. Oh, cool. Geez, a lot of scholars and, you know.
Well, we are very scholarly young men, so...
I think you meant to say slovenly, but
well, we've done, you know, a lot of work with the Learn Liberty. We did a lot of their videos back in the day, and have worked with their scholars like Tom Bell and, mm-hmm. and Jim Otteson and Steve Davies, and it's really fun to kind of see how these guys approach all this stuff. They have different ways of distilling things and making them entertainment or entertaining while still getting information across. So not as much in the area of like mainstream celebrities. Like a lot of times people figure probably, you know, you're in LA, you're bumping into them left and right. But I think they're nocturnal. They're just like, they hide.
Yeah. No problem. All right. I know you have to go to some other sessions that you've got with other staff members, but before we go, I just have some pitches for you. So you talk about how we need to get into the space of like making more entertaining videos for people to win hearts and minds. So I've come up with a few things here. So the entire IPA develops superpowers and we have to fight a supervillain known as Thanos. Good. Now, is that something that you reckon is going to be easy market? Do you reckon people are going to watch that?
I mean, yeah. Hero stuff is big.
Hero stuff's good.
I say thumbs up on that one.
My other one was, how do you think about this? So Pete is sent back in time to save me because a socialist has also been sent back in time to kill me and my mum.
What? Yeah.
You reckon that's the winner?
You know what's great about it? It hits that sweet spot where it feels like something I've seen before, but yet it's familiar and fresh.
It's a fresh take on it.
There's an original message to underline that. Anyway, it's Mug of Ice, Lights, Camera, Liberty Network, part of the Atlas Network. Really great organization. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you to Dan and Michael for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. All right, let us get into this. We got a short end to the show this week.
Not much funny stuff happened.
No. So, world, get funnier.
Yeah.
That's our lesson to the world. Message to the world. Be a bit stupider. But we do have two good ones. I'll start off, Pete, if I may.
Nah, you go for it.
So, we are recording in Victoria. We've got an election coming up quite soon. We got hit with the early vote cards, so things are really starting to move. And it's not looking too good for the Liberals. Not looking too good at all. Labor pretty heavily favored in this one.
Are they?
Yes. And now, so the Liberals, they're reaching into the bag of tricks and they are going to try and find the policies that work. This morning in the front page of the Herald Sun, struggling families would get a half-price flat-screen TVs and cheap fridges if they trade in old power-sapping models under a coalition promise to slash household bills. Opposition leader Matthew Guy will on Friday pledge, or today, generous discounts for low-income Victorian households in a bid to save them $325 a year. So, vote Liberal, and you can either get a discount fridge, or you can hold out for the flat-screen TV, or you can throw it all away for what's in the mystery box.
That is, I like to call this the Oprah.
Yes.
The Oprah policy.
You get a fridge, you get a TV, you get a fridge as well. That's amazing.
This is the cornerstone of the free market revolution amazing. That's about to take over Victoria, James.
So, the Liberal Party, don't forget the Liberal part of that.
No.
Have a problem in high energy costs.
Yep.
What they'll continue to do is to subsidize renewable energies, but they'll add in handouts.
Yeah, to battlers. Quotation marks.
Subsidies and handouts.
Did you know what
Liberal Party.
What I found out about this, James?
2018. Right now.
Oh, yeah. Get on board.
Get to TV.
I found out about this when I did some research that this appliance replacement offer is also happens in New South Wales.
I saw that, yeah. And it actually worked, they said.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Like, as in it got them votes or...
Probably.
Because I was like, one of my initial reaction was they should pack Victoria up.
Well.
And merge with New South Wales. But then later on...
Isolate New South Wales and Victoria and then just save the rest of Australia.
Just leave.
Just a quarantine zone up the South Australian border, cutting across to the Queensland. Just isolate these two places.
Yeah, I'm not against that idea. My first reaction was pack the joint up.
Mm. My first reaction was I do need a new fridge. Like, do I qualify as an Aussie battler? I am a battler.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in the John Howard's traditional way of saying battler, but I am a battler.
Are you saying battler with a D?
Battler.
It's like battler.
Battler. Battler.
Yeah, thanks.
Well.
Anyway.
Give me my fridge.
I reckon you're a battler.
I'm on TV.
No one took the mystery box.
No.
What's a mystery box about? I'm scared.
Well, you don't know. It's a mystery box.
Yeah,
so would you choose the TV, the fridge, and the mystery box?
TV.
Live a little, you two. Anything could be in the mystery box. Even a TV.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Like another one.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be odd.
Yeah.
All right.
You two have to live a little. I'm taking the mystery box every time. It could be like five things I really want and a mystery box. I'm still taking the mystery box.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that about you, James. That doesn't square with your risk-averse personality.
How dare you?
I knew that would troll you. All right, should we move on to Bunnings?
We shall.
Speaking of bloody outrages.
Yeah.
Speaking of packing the joint up. look at your segment in that.
Should we do this one
as could well? That's basically our podcast, is pack the joint up.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah. So you would have seen this week.
Done as Theresa May.
That's right. There's a big story this week, obviously, Bunnings. Have said that they're not going to... The great Bunnings barbecue that everyone knows, when you go to Bunnings, you get a snag.
Mm-hmm.
Now they are not going to have onions. It's a Bunnings directive. They're not going to have onions on top of the sandwich. They're going to have it on the bottom because they don't want onions falling on the ground and people slipping over on them. I'm sure you've already seen this story. Everyone's, you know, bought into it, even the Prime Minister. But, you know, obviously, what a bloody outrage.
Yeah. Is there anything more unsettling... Would there be anything more unsettling than see the onions go on the sausage before... No, the onions go on the roll before the sausage.
Yeah, it's like, well, I don't want an onion sandwich, mate.
That's like someone like going into a lift and someone's facing the back instead of the front.
Yeah.
That's just so unsettling.
Yeah, sorry. No, look, I agree. It's just wrong. It just doesn't fit right.
It's just not right.
And obviously we should say, you know, Bunnings are allowed to do what they want. They're a private company. It's not really their fault. They're just trying to avoid lawsuits.
Yeah.
And people have come out...
I'm thinking it should be illegal for Bunnings to do this.
Well, look, we believe in small government, but not no government.
Yeah. Limited, not, you know.
Yeah, non-existent. And people have come out and said, oh, yeah, no, I slipped on onion. This is a good move. Like, more people than you'd think have slipped on the onion.
I haven't actually slipped on an onion.
No, I think you're in the majority.
Never seen any onions dropped on the floor in Bunnings, though.
Okay.
Mm.
So I don't know where this has come from.
Well, maybe that's because you're not following Trevor's advice. So Trevor is a Queensland farmer who came forward as one of the people that have slipped over.
Yeah.
And... You know, like, it sounds like he genuinely did hurt himself. And I'm sorry that happened.
And we're not making light of that.
I'm not making light of that.
Be
that as it may. He says now, every time I go into Bunnings now, I look on the floor, I look for onions.
Oh, Nina.
Put that on a shirt. No,
sorry, guys.
That is a beautiful life philosophy. Yeah. Look for onions.
Yeah.
Always be cautious. Look for onions should be on a mug or a t-shirt or something. That's merch. Trevor's got merch at his footstep right now. That's his book. Look for onions. The new
Trevor story.
Lifestyle, meditative, self-help guru Trevor. Look for onions.
Yep. Nah, look, that sounds like a goer, James.
Yep.
I also
like this part of the story. Oh, sorry, you go.
That's all right. I was just going to say I've worked at... I've done a few of these barbecues.
And there are
lots of rules. You have to do an info session.
Really?
You can't wear thongs.
Oh.
Because I don't know why I can't wear thongs. You have to wear shoes.
What if it's really hot?
You have to wear shoes. Closed toe shoes, otherwise they won't give you a barbecue next year.
Oh, what?
Which is a big stick because you make like a grand.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that you worked in Bunnings because I would love to see the ad of Pete You know how they interview staff members? Is that's Bunnings, right?
Yeah, that's Bunnings. Yep.
might not surprise you that I'm not exactly a handyman. I also like this part of the story. Peter got involved. The people for the ethical treatment of animals.
Oh.
Calling for them to use vegan sausages. I don't know how that would solve anything.
Yeah. We could still slip on the onions.
Yeah, you can still slip on onions, but like, I like Peter getting involved. Just,
how did they get a run? Like, who's the janitor that said, oh, okay, yeah, I'll put that in the story?
Oh, no, I like to think they called Peter. Like, they called Peter. It's like, Peter, what's your take on this? Anyway, people, long-time listeners of the show might remember a few weeks ago, Peter got a company like to change their logo from animals in a circus to animals patrolling the wild.
That's right, I do remember.
So maybe the way we solve this is we have onions patrolling the wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that'll solve it.
Yep.
If onions are just walking the wilds of the savannah.
Yep.
Sure. Works for me.
Sure.
Are we good?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
I'm done. Sure. All right, cool. That's it for the show this week. Thank you to Daniel Wild and Michael Ozias again.
Big Oz.
The Big Oz, who is in Oz, as Pete was the first person to ever say earlier in the show.
He actually said it in one of his seminars. Nicked it completely, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, really interesting chats. Make sure you guys are checking out the Atlas Network. They do some really cool stuff. And thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. My brain has absolutely stopped working. Look, it's lunchtime. I'm hungry. Spotify, Podbean, Pocket Cast. You can download us through all the apps, and so can your friends and family. Make sure you're telling the show. Best way to keep growing the show is for you guys to tell your friends and family about the show, get some new listeners in. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you're leaving us a 5-star review, and make sure you put it in the comments, tips for the show, things you want to see on the show, things you want to see back. I also want to hear whether or not you would take the fridge, TV, or mystery box. So leave that in the comments. I want to see how risk averse our listeners are. And Nina, we got a lot of listeners who are members who want to they might want to donate, and we got a lot of people who aren't members and they might want to become members. So what advice would you give to them?
I'll advise them
apart from look for onions.
Well,
first advice to everyone, look for onions.
Look on your shoes. Probably you already stepped on an onion.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, my advice for you who has not become a member yet or probably want to become a member, just visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on the donation button if you want to donate, or click on the join button if you want to become a member. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voices of freedom in Australia.
All right. Very cool. See you next week.
See everyone.